A distortion field has locked onto us, Jane Ogley reported. His voice was strained, high. We can't jump clear. For a brief moment, Kyle Prager wondered what it would be like to command a Voidhawk, the effortless power and total superiority. It was almost a feeling of envy. Three of the intercepting ships were curving round to chase the Beasling, while the frigates, Chengo and Gombari, only rated one pursuer each. Mother Mary, with that formation they must know what we're carrying. He formed a scuttle code in his mind, reviewing the procedure before datavising it into the flight computer. It was simple enough, shutting down the safeguards in the main drive's antimatter confinement chambers, engulfing nearby space with a Nova blast of light and hard radiation. I could wait until the Voidhawks rendezvoused, take them with us. But the crews are only doing their job. The flimsy infrared image of the three pursuit craft suddenly increased dramatically, brightening, expanding. Eight wavering petals of energy opened outwards from each of them, the sharp, glaring tips moving swiftly away from the center. Analysis programs cut in. Flight vector projections materialized, linking all 24 projectiles to the Beasling with looped, laser-like threads of light. The exhaust plumes were hugely radioactive. Acceleration was hitting 40 Gs. Antimatter propulsion. "Combat Wasp launch!" Jane Ogley shouted hoarsely. "They're not Voidhawks," Kyle Prager said with grim fury. "They're fucking Blackhawks. Omuter's hired Blackhawks." He datavised an evasion maneuver order into the flight computer, frantically activating the Beasling's defense procedures. He'd been almost criminally negligent in not identifying the hostiles as soon as they emerged. He checked his neural mnemonics. Elapsed time since their emergence was 7 seconds. Was that really all? Even so, his response had been woefully sloppy, in an arena where milliseconds was the most precious currency. They would pay for that, maybe with their lives. An acceleration warning blared through the Beasling. Audio, optical, and datavise. His crew would be strapped in, but Mother Mary alone knew what the civilians they carried were doing. The ship's acceleration built smoothly, and he felt the mnemonic membrane supplements in his body hardening, supporting his internal organs against the G-force, preventing them from being pushed through his spine, ensuring an undiminished blood supply to his brain, forestalling blackout. Beasling shuddered violently as its own volley of combat wasps launched. Acceleration reached 8 Gs and carried on building. In the Beasling's forward crew module, Dr. Alcad Mzu had been reviewing the ship's status as it flew towards their next jump coordinate at 1.5 Gs. Neural mnemonics processed the raw data to provide a composite of the starship's external sensor images, along with flight vector projections. The picture unfurled behind her retinas, scintillating ghost shadows until she closed her eyelids. Chengo and Gombari showed as intense streaks of blue-white light, the glare from their drive exhausts overwhelming the background starfield. It was a tight formation. Chengo was 2,000 kilometers away. Gombari just over 3,000. Alcad knew it took superb astrogation for ships to emerge within 5,000 kilometers of each other after a jump of 10 light-years. Garissa had spent a lot of money on equipping its navy with the best hardware available. Money which could have been better spent at a university, or on supporting the National Medical Service. Garissa wasn't a particularly rich world. As to where the Department of Defense had acquired such large amounts of antimatter, Alcad had studiously avoided asking. "It will be about 30 minutes before the next jump," Peter Abdul said. Alcad cancelled the datavise. The sensor visualization of the ships faded from her perception, replaced by the Spartan grey-green composite of the cabin walls. Peter was standing in the open oval hatch, wearing a dark turquoise ship suit, padded on all the joints to protect him from bruising knocks in freefall. He smiled invitingly at her. She could see the worry behind the bright, lively eyes. Peter was 35. 1.80 meters tall, with skin actually darker than her own deep ebony. He worked in the university mathematics department, and they had been engaged for 18 months.